Welcome back. It's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. Glad you're with us. It's time now for our monthly feature called Smart Nutrition. Today, a conversation about the so-called Biggest Loser study. The Biggest Loser is a reality show on NBC that started in 2004, wherein contestants train vigorously for several months to see who can lose the most weight. The Biggest Loser study has been in the news lately because when researchers followed guests on the popular show for 6 years after they'd shed enormous amounts of weight, they found that almost everybody had regained most of the weight that they'd lost. Our nutrition diva, Monica Reinagle, is here to sort out the reasons why this happened. Monica is a licensed nutritionist who blogs at Nutrition Over Easy and whose weekly podcasts appear on quickanddirtytips.com. Good to see you, Monica.
Good morning, Tom.
So almost half of Americans, about 117 million of us, have chronic diseases which are preventable that are due to being overweight. And even more than that, about 155 million Americans, adults, are overweight or obese. What did this study find about the Biggest Loser, the people who are on this show? I mean, they train like crazy. They're under the supervision of a trainer, and their diet has changed, and their whole lifestyle has changed. And they lose sometimes well in excess of 100 pounds over a period of a few months. What did this study look at, and what did it find?
Well, as you said, they followed these Biggest Losers for several years, and they found that most of them regained the weight, and about a third of them ended up heavier than they were before they started. And that in and of itself isn't that surprising, because that's what happens to most people that lose weight. Eventually, they gain it back, and sometimes they gain back more. What the study looked at more specifically was the metabolic rate of those people. And what they found was that the people that had lost so much weight in such a short period of time had lasting sort of damage to their metabolism, which meant that having lost all that weight, they needed very, very few calories. And so even if they ate the amount of calories that should have allowed them to maintain that lower weight, they were gaining weight anyway. And obviously—
And it's because their metabolism
is
changed.
So slow, right. And this is what we call metabolic compensation. And it happens when you lose a whole bunch of weight really, really fast. Your body sort of panics and makes some drastic changes to your metabolism to prevent you from starving to death. It's sort of a, you know, maladaptive response in today's society. But, you know, for cavemen, this was a survival technique. So a lot of people find this extremely discouraging. They're thinking, okay, so
I should say,
absolutely no way to win this game. Even if I manage to get that weight off, it's going to come back because I'll have damaged my metabolism.
So are there ways of keeping your metabolism undamaged? I mean, are there, for example, types of exercise you could do that are better for your metabolism? I've always heard, for example, that weightlifting increases your metabolism more than cardiac exercise like running or cycling or being on a Stairmaster. Is that true?
Well, it's true, but the effect is very small. Mm-hmm. And there's also similar arguments about different types of diets, like diets that are higher in protein and fat and lower in carbohydrate, that they might tweak your metabolism. And that's also true, but the effects are very modest, and they tend to be dwarfed by the impact of rapid weight loss on metabolism. So I think that there is a way to lose weight without setting yourself up for this kind of no-win situation. But it's not going to be very popular, because what it involves is losing weight much more slowly.
Mm-hmm. You wrote a piece in the Huffington Post about this, which we'll post online. And so the patience really is a virtue when it comes to losing weight.
Yeah, we look at diets as being successful if they can guarantee us that we're going to lose a pound or two a week. And I think that probably what we should be looking for are diets that are going to help us lose a pound or two a month. And you're not going to see any best-selling diet books promising to help you lose a pound a month, you know? We don't have the patience to spend 2 years losing 15 pounds. But apparently, we have the patience to lose that same 15 pounds every other year for 20 years. So, you know, it would require a little bit less instant gratification, but I think it has the potential to give us a much more lasting result.
And it's also a matter of adjusting our goals, really. I mean, in other words, if you say, I want to lose 30 pounds, you know, and then just set out to do that, and there's plenty of people who can do that, but maybe that's not the right goal long term if that's in fact going to have a deleterious effect on your metabolism.
What you say about choosing new goals, I think, is interesting, because it may be that if you have been overweight for a period of time, your quote-unquote ideal weight or goal weight may be higher than the ideal weight for someone who has never been overweight. And part of the problem may be that people are trying to lose too much weight. And there is a lot to be gained by losing even a small amount of weight. Even if you're still technically over in the overweight category, if you have lost 5 or 10% of your body weight, you will already have reaped enormous benefits in terms of improving your blood sugar control and your disease risk factors. That's, you know, one of the things that we're so concerned about. And there's also been some criticism that body weight, it may not be the best metric for health. You know, that something like whether your waist is smaller than your hips may be a much better indicator of your disease risk than just your weight. And so that we might want to just measure success a little bit differently for people who have spent a period of time significantly overweight.
Because there are these charts that say, okay, you know, if you're a woman and you're this age mm-hmm. and you're this tall, you should weigh this much.
I think maybe we need a different chart for people with a history of obesity, and this might be able to save us some angst.
Mm-hmm. You talk about calorie cycling. What does that mean?
So this is a technique that where you reduce calories, but you alternate eating more calories one day, less calories, fewer calories the next day, so that you're not eating the same number of calories every day. And this would allow you to have a net reduction in calories, which would help you lose weight, but it may help prevent that metabolic adjustment because your body every other day is getting a higher number of calories, and so it's not kind of going into survival mode. And this has actually got a lot of research behind it showing that it can be very effective. And I think that there are potential metabolic advantages, but I think there's also some behavior and psychological benefit here too, because we've talked on Smart Nutrition before about the fact that willpower is something that can be exhausted. And if you're only kind of restricting your food intake every other day, it means that you get some relief from that vigilance and that restraint, and that may help people be more successful long term.
Runners, when they're training for a marathon, even though it's a distance thing or a half marathon, 13 miles, 26 miles, they still do what they call interval training, meaning mm-hmm. they run really fast and then they slow down for a little bit and then run really fast. You're suggesting perhaps to do the same kind of thing when it comes to dieting, weight loss interval training.
Yeah, I've kind of borrowed this concept from fitness. Interval training is very effective. And, you know, what if you had 40 pounds to lose and instead of losing it all in a really sustained effort over the course of 6 or 8 months or something, what if you just lost 5 pounds and then spent a month just maintaining that 5 pound loss, and then you took the next step down? There's also some research supporting this report. Some scientists out in Stanford tried a trial where they had women who were going to lose weight, but first women were practicing weight maintenance before they started to lose weight. And the group that did that were much more successful in maintaining their weight loss.
The maintenance is a big part of it. Okay. Always fun to see you. Thanks so much. Monica Reinagle is the nutrition diva and my co-conspirator every month for our Smart Nutrition segments here on Maryland Morning. Monica blogs at Nutrition Over Easy, and she does a weekly podcast on quickanddirtytips.com. We've got a link to Monica piece in the Huffington Post about ways to avoid the fate of the contestants on The Biggest Loser. Come to our website, wipr.org/Maryland Morning. That'll do it for us today. Coming up Friday morning on the broadcast, a conversation with another one of our city's most thoughtful arts leaders. Julia Marchari Alexander has been the director of the Walters Art Museum for 3 years. She joins me to talk about how one of our most cherished arts institutions is connecting to communities of color and others who have not traditionally been part of the museum scene. Plus, I'll talk to the acclaimed bass clarinetist Todd Marcus. I hope you can join us Friday morning on Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall for Nathan Sterner and the entire Maryland Morning team. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.